This is Radio Boston. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Sasha Pfeiffer. Those of us who live in the city often feel as though we're under siege from various things. Congestion, noise, traffic, sometimes even violence. But those who live in the suburbs have been under a siege of their own in recent years from ticks. We used to hear all the time about the tick problem on the Cape and Islands, but over the last few years, scientists have observed a huge surge in the tick population in the suburbs around Boston. As a result, Lyme disease has become endemic through much of the Metro West area and beyond. It's a common misconception that ticks acquire Lyme disease from deer. Actually, they usually pick up the bacteria from rodents or birds before they pass it along to us. But deer do provide an abundant food source for ticks, so it's therefore believed that fewer deer equals fewer ticks. In this story we originally aired in October, we brought you to one western suburb that this year is determined to fight ticks and Lyme disease with bows and arrows.
My name is Dan Wolf. I'm the owner of Mass Deer Service, and I help residents in the Metro West area of Boston deal with some of the issues associated with too many deer on their properties.
So you're seriously Wolf the Deer Hunter?
Correct.
You just can't make that kind of thing up, nor can you make up Dan's custom truck.
All right, this is the Deermobile.
Deer embroideries on the leather, antlers jangling from the rear view.
Yeah. That sounds like killing deer.
We're driving through the winding roads of Dover, a green, well-to-do town with big houses on big lots.
Right now we're heading up to a property up on Farm Street. Actually, the lady inquired last winter after deer season. She's got a large piece of property in a very high deer density area.
Okay, we're good to go. Get to see the big dog in action here.
Now, my goal is to secure permission from this property owner to hunt the deer.
Deer-ravaged property owners don't pay Dan to hunt deer. They just give him permission to hunt on their land. And then Dan turns around and basically sells that permission to recreational hunters who are looking for a place to shoot. He vets the hunters for competence, sets them up with maps and documentation, and it's a match made in heaven.
Hi,
are you guys on?
Now, Dan has had some problems with anti-hunting activists in the past, so he asked me not to identify any of the property owners he works with. This lady, we'll call her Wendy, takes us out back to see her huge grass and tree-filled lot.
So this is where we see them.
Right.
Then they go off into the woods down there. We're surrounded.
The contrast between Wolf the deer hunter and Wendy the upscale suburban mom is striking. She doesn't seem like the hunting type.
I love the Tetons, and I've always been a, you know, give me a home where the buffalo roam type of person, where I love sitting out here and seeing the deer. But once you have a kid that has Lyme disease and you're bitten all the time, all of a sudden you have very different feelings about hunting the deer.
The deer tick population started to grow exponentially here around 2005, and now Dover is basically under siege. Epidemiologists start to get worried about Lyme disease when there are about 100 incidents per 100,000 people. This town is now at 270, and that's put quite a damper on their enjoyment of these big old green lots.
When we first moved in here, we used to take walks down to Rocky Narrows on trails and everything. And with this huge tick problem, we don't have any desire to do it.
It's tough. Tick bites. People are like, we're prisoners in paradise, you know?
Right. It's true.
Did they bring it upon themselves?
Absolutely.
Sam Telford is a professor at the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts. He says even though humans long ago killed off the deer's natural predators, we at least used to do a pretty good job of preying on them ourselves. That is, until suburban sprawl happened.
More than 10 years ago, I and many others predicted that the corridor between Route 128 and Route 495 would become the new Cape and Islands with respect to Lyme disease and other deer tick transmitted infections because of suburbanization. Each new house that goes in removes 18 acres of huntable land, at least by the most effective means of hunting, which is by shotgun.
Presently, our deer density is anywhere between 24 and 28 per square mile.
Barbara Roth-Schechter chairs the Dover Board of Health.
The ideal density should be somewhere between 6 and 8 deer per square mile.
At the outside estimates, there's a deer for every dozen people in Dover.
And while a shotgun solution might not be right for suburbia, Barbara does have other plans.
This year, we have 6 town-owned properties to be open to our bow hunting efforts.
Are we going to be harpooning deer on the town green, or what?
For crying out loud, absolutely not.
Actually, they're only going to do this in the more remote parts of Dover. It's just a little pilot program happening on a few hundred public acres. To allay public anxiety, they're painstakingly interviewing and background checking the few dozen recreational bow and arrow hunters that'll be allowed on the land.
And that is critical to understand. We're talking bow hunting from tree stands. So you cannot shoot straight out. You have to shoot down. And the greatest distance is anywhere between 15 and 20 feet.
There's certainly advantage to using a bow and arrow in the suburban environment.
Back in the Deermobile with Dan Wolf.
Yes, the range is much tighter, but it's much more challenging. You have to know in your mind what's the most opportune shot to take. You really don't want to have injured animals running around with arrows in them where people can view them, especially young children. And does this look like 119 to you?
Dan says he doesn't want a piece of Dover's first ever public land deer hunt. Too much red tape. For now, he's content going door to door and getting homeowners' permission to hunt and scoping out their woods for prey.
You see this? These little holes in the grass?
Yeah, those are footprints.
Oh, wow.
These are fairly fresh. And you can check your pants for ticks periodically as well, because they'll get on you down low and start moving up.
That's so creepy. In the hour that I spent tromping around Dover with Dan, I accumulated 20 ticks that I know of.
Oh my God, they're everywhere.
15 years ago, if someone had told me, oh, well, there are deer ticks in back of your office, I would have said, you're crazy.
Sam Telford from Tufts Veterinary School.
But now, if you came out and asked to see deer ticks, we would spend 10 minutes and we'd have the deer ticks to see.
What's the way out of this? How many deer do we have to kill? You know, what do we got to do?
Well, killing deer is not a magic bullet. People have to manage their vegetation. They can clean up around their homes. These ticks need high humidity. So if you have brushy areas and lots of leaf litter, that's a great place for the ticks to develop. I've been caricatured as saying you have to kill deer. That's the only solution. It's not. It's a program of vegetation management, deer reduction. If we do all of these things, then we can reduce the risk of getting Lyme disease.
All right, you go back to killing Bambi's mom, and we'll just get back to making radio. I'd like to walk you through a field of wildflowers, and I'd like to check you for ticks. Silver bullet or not, Dover town officials say they've taken down about 10 deer on their public lands since we first aired that story. And they say they're happy with that, but it's really just a scratch in the surface. If communities like Dover want to reach what state wildlife officials consider optimal deer density, they'll eventually have to reduce their deer populations by as much as 3/4. Now, hearing all this prompted listener Mary Harrison to leave this comment at WBUR.org/Boston. She writes, "Reducing deer does not work, as many studies have shown. People need to know the truth. Lyme disease is horrible." Now, what's she talking about? Well, at least some of the research she's referring to there has been conducted by Rick Ostfeld, disease ecologist and senior scientist at the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies in Millbrook, New York. He's the author of Lyme Disease, The Ecology of a Complex Ecosystem, and he's on the line with me right now. Dr. Ostfeld, is it not true that fewer deer means fewer ticks?
It is often not true that fewer deer means fewer ticks. When you cull the deer herd so aggressively that you eradicate all the deer or next to all the deer that occur in an area, and when that area is on an island where the availability of other hosts for the adult stage of the black-legged tick is very low, then you often get success. You do curtail the tick population. What I'm arguing is that the applicability of those studies on islands to the mainland has not been well demonstrated by quite a large number of studies showing that when you reduce the deer herd somewhat more modestly than eradicating it, and you do it on the mainland, you tend to get, at best, very, very spotty effects on tick populations, and oftentimes no effect at all.
Oftentimes no effect at all. In what kind of situations are we talking about there?
There are studies that have been done in southern Connecticut where they reduced the deer herd on two sites from about 100 deer to about 20 or so. And on one of the two sites, they did see a correlation between deer population and tick population. On the other site, they saw no relationship at all. And there's a study done in northern New Jersey where they culled the deer very dramatically there. And 4 years after the deer cull, there was no effect, there was no relationship between deer numbers and either tick numbers or actual Lyme disease cases in the human population compared to a control site where the deer had not been managed. And then we've done studies in southeastern New York where we've been monitoring deer populations and tick populations for 18 years. And we've had fluctuations in the deer by a factor of about three, so they would be 3 to 4 times more abundant in some years than in others. And there's not even a speck of a sign of a correlation with tick numbers the next year or 2 years later. So there are quite a number of studies now where there just isn't any evidence of a relationship between deer and tick numbers.
Well, what you're saying, as far as I know, really flies in the face of the conventional wisdom regarding ticks and Lyme disease. It's really quite stunning. And the people in this town of Dover, west of Boston, that I mentioned earlier, they've organized this big deer hunt to control their tick population. And they've been doing that under the advice of Sam Telford, who is a professor in the Department of Biomedical Sciences at the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University. And he's a renowned expert in tick-borne diseases. And we had quoted him in that story that we originally ran in October. And so we've got him on the line with us again right now. So Dr. Telford, does Dr. Ostfeld just have it all wrong?
No, he doesn't have it wrong, but the tick does indeed depend upon deer as the main reproductive host. That's where the adult tick derives its blood males in order to produce the next generation of ticks. Now, there is obviously a threshold number of deer somewhere where there is a increase in tick density. And so what we've been focusing on is sites where these populations have been established for a long time, or more recently, in the case of Dover. And those are sites where there are indications that there are too many deer, our previous studies, especially those on islands, but there are some instances where they're not necessarily islands, where deer have been greatly reduced, the tick numbers have also been reduced. The Jordan study that's been referred to for northern New Jersey is actually still in progress. There was a first paper out of that. There was a first paper out of our Great Island study in 1984 that also said the same thing. We don't see much of an effect. We carried it out another 5 years, and lo and behold, there was an effect. So the body of evidence is actually quite clear in terms of targeting deer. And in fact, what has not been mentioned is that in October of last year, there was a large volume of the journal Vector-Borne and Zoonotic Diseases using this a four-poster device which applies insecticide to the neck and head of deer coming in to take corn. And they show a 60 to 80% reduction in the nymphal stage of the tick up and down the East Coast. They had seven sites up and down the East Coast.
That's really interesting, because a lot of the people that we had commenting on the story that we ran back in October were asking, is there some kind of non-lethal means that could be applied to deer to help pull down the tick population? Someone suggests hitting them with a tranquilizer dart and putting frontline on them like you'd put frontline on your dog. And what you're talking about is really something not too far from that.
It's the same thing. Now, that certainly works. However, it would cost a community like Nantucket, for example, $350,000 a year for an unspecified number of years in order to use this technology to reduce the tick population 60 to 80%. And so it's a matter of economics.
Sure. There's a bigger picture conversation to be had there. We're going to have that in just a second. But this seems like a crucial point to me, this basic question of the correlation between the deer population and the tick population, because it's what policymakers in Massachusetts and elsewhere have been basing so many of their decisions on. So I want to go back to Dr. Ostfeld, senior scientist at the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies in Millbrook, New York. Dr. Ostfeld, is it just the case that, as Sam Telford says, you're not looking far enough into the future with the data, that if you cull the deer herd, if you just wait 5-10 years, you will see eventually a reduction in the tick population and thereby a reduction in incidence of Lyme disease in humans?
So I think that's an empirical question, and of course one could carry out longer-term studies and ask whether eventually an impact of deer reduction does manifest itself. But based on the life cycle of the tick, if you reduce the deer herd, you expect your impact on the critical stage for delivering nasty tick bites that can make people sick to occur about two summers later. So you really should start to see an effect and maybe see your maximal effect within 2 years. Now, the Jordan et al. Study that we've been talking about carried on their...
This is the one in New Jersey that you mentioned?
The one in New Jersey where they culled the deer. They carried on their study and published the results after 4 years of monitoring the subsequent tick populations.
And that study observed no reduction in the tick population over those 4 years because presumably the ticks all fed off of raccoons and possums and skunks and the like instead of the deer.
The other thing that happens, this was demonstrated in a study on Crane Beach in Massachusetts, is as you reduce the deer herd, the ticks crowd on the remaining deer. So you get an increased number of ticks per deer as you reduce the deer herd. So you might even have the same net number of ticks feeding as you incrementally reduce the deer herd. And we don't know yet whether they also tend to aggregate on these non-deer hosts as you reduce the deer population.
So they might just all crowd up on a smaller number of deer, even if you eliminate a lot of the deer.
In that one study, that was demonstrated on Crane Beach, Massachusetts.
Dr. Sam Telford from Tufts, is this just a case of two scientists looking at the same data and earnestly coming at differing conclusions?
I think so. There are a lot of questions that still need to be answered, and of course, other medium-sized mammals, coyotes, for example, certainly feed ticks. But in the studies that have been published to date, the preponderance of evidence is that if you reduce deer, you reduce the number of ticks. And so as a public health person, I'm sitting here going, well, what can we do? Do we wait for more studies, or we just empirically do the experiment?
Well, it sounds like there's some open scientific questions here, and we look forward to following how they develop. Thank you both to you gentlemen for coming in and debating this issue with us. Dr. Rick Ostfeld is a senior scientist at the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies in Millbrook, New York. Thank you, Dr. Ostfeld.
You're welcome. Thank you, Adam.
And Dr. Sam Telford is a professor in the Department of Biomedical Sciences at the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine right here at Tufts University. Thank you again, Dr. Telford.
Thank you for inviting me.
And we have to take one more break. When we come back... When you're performing in a place like a homeless shelter, I imagine that when you ask the audience to sing along, you get quite a range of voices.
We do. There are no masks in the shelter.
Stay with us. I'm Adam Ragusea. This is Radio Boston.